Hi, and welcome back to the second in a series made for you, the paramedic working to care for whoever and whatever comes your way. We are covering the skills you need to care for the seizing child in four focused podcasts and one video. I'm Julia Magana, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at UC Davis, and I'm here today with Manish Shah, who is also a pediatric emergency medicine physician, but at the Texas Children's Hospital Emergency Centers. Manish is an expert in pediatric seizures in the pre-hospital setting. And in the last podcast, we talked about the difficulty of identifying a seizure. It can be subtle. But if we watch for those subtle signs, such as lip smacking, eye deviation, or changes in vital signs, we can identify more seizures. This time, we go over the first steps when we do identify the seizing child. So, Manish, walk me through what you see as the ideal medic approach to a seizing child. Let me start off by giving you a clinical scenario, okay? Alert goes out for a 9-month-old with seizures. The medic arrives and sees a baby on the floor. The eyes are rolled back and there's twitching or jerking extremities. The parents are screaming. We have legit hot potato syndrome going on here. There's no pets on the loose. Scene is safe. What do you do first? Walk us through the protocol. What do you think are the top priorities?
So you mentioned that the scene is safe, so that's important for any EMS call. But after that, I think for any patient, ensuring that airway, breathing, and circulation are intact are important priorities. And so this might seem obvious, but sometimes something that looks like a seizure may actually be due to something else. Arrhythmias are a common cause of some things that look like seizures, so it's important to make sure that they've got adequate circulation. But the majority of patients that have a true seizure do have intact circulation, but at times they may have an airway obstruction because they lose muscle tone while they're seizing. And so doing a chin lift or a jaw thrust may be important to open up the airway. For infants and toddlers who have large heads relative to the rest of their body, it's important to place a shoulder roll to ensure that their airway is open.
Sometimes I feel like there's a lot of secretions as well, so suctioning can help out with that as well.
Absolutely. So because they can obstruct their airway, sometimes kids will get hypoxic or they'll get cyanotic. And so empirically, just placing a non-rebreather mask with oxygen is important because of that risk for hypoxia. When I give instructions to parents about what to do if their child seizes again, I also tell them the same thing. I say, don't put anything in their mouth. Lay them flat on their back because that is going to be a position that is most helpful to keep their airway open. And so even for the paramedic, we don't recommend putting anything in their mouth or laying them on the side. Now, I would say the one exception to that in terms of airway management is if they're dealing with an apneic patient and they're having trouble providing bag mass ventilation to the patient who's apneic, then they might need to place an oral pharyngeal airway. If that patient does not have a gag reflex, then they may need to put one in. Most EMS agencies carry nasopharyngeal airways, and those can also be helpful airway adjuncts in the setting of airway obstruction in the midst of a seizure.
Yeah, I love those in the middle of a seizure when you're like post-ictal period as well, just to kind of help facilitate everything. The other piece of it that I see with airway, Manish, is vomiting. It's not unusual for a child to vomit in the middle of a seizure or as they're coming out of a seizure. So I'm always very aware that that's a possibility and ready to roll or suction as needed.
Absolutely. So it is important to have suctioning readily available since either from pooling secretions or because of vomiting, either during or after the seizure, that's definitely important. I think, you know, when we talk about airway, if you look at the data from studies that I've done, I've noticed that about 10 to 15% will require some additional support for breathing, such as bag mass ventilation for apnea or for slow breathing. But most children continue to breathe effectively during a seizure. And there is some pediatric evidence that suggests that most children who get intubated by EMS quickly get extubated in the emergency department if they were intubated for a seizure. And so in those situations, when EMS has an apneic child or a child who's breathing slowly, I recommend bag mass ventilation in these cases and deferring intubation to the hospital. And the main reason for this is that most seizures do stop on their own, and those that don't often stop with on their own will stop with one dose of medication. Also, it's difficult to intubate in the field if the patient's not limp and hasn't received a neuromuscular blocker. And so that's usually not the case for seizing patients in the field. Usually they have increased tone and they're not relaxed enough to easily intubate.
Yeah, I think those are all really great points. I know we're moving away from pediatric intubations in the pre-hospital field anyways, and these are a really prime example of who not to intubate that we can most of the time manage until you get to the hospital. Okay, so we've got airway, we've got breathing. Circulation, you said arrhythmia can be a part of it. Do you do an EKG or do you recommend just putting onto the monitor?
I think just placing them on the monitor is sufficient. In the hospital, if the emergency medicine physician decides to get an EKG to screen for a potential arrhythmia, I leave that to their discretion. But I'd say in the field, really placing them on the monitor is sufficient. And I don't think it's getting a 12 lead in the field is priority. You know, you may see some other vital sign abnormalities, like I mentioned, tachycardia, but you can see that strictly by placing them on a monitor.
When I have a child that is cognitively delayed, sometimes you can't tell, are they back to normal or are they not? And so watching that heart rate and seeing that jump 20, 30 points can kind of point to, oh, it looks like we're back to seizing again. I also see hypertension as well. I oftentimes see a higher blood pressure, and some of that's just because of the muscle tension in the extremities where you're measuring it. So more often than not, I see that hypertension initially. After medications may be a different story, but...
Sure, yeah. You may see hypertension, you may see tachycardia, you might see hypoxia, you might see slow or absent breathing, and then for the child that's having a fever, you might see a fever. So some or all of the vital signs could be abnormal for various reasons.
Okay, so we got airway, we got breathing, we got circulation. What's the next priority after we've done all of that?
So really, the next priority is to stop the seizure. And so I even place that at higher priority than doing a history or doing the full exam, because if it's clear that the patient is seizing, then stopping the seizure as quickly as possible is important.
That sounds really great. So you identify someone seizing, you do airway, breathing, circulation, stop the seizure, and not get a glucose. Talk to me about that.
There have been several studies that have shown that hypoglycemia in actively seizing children in the field is quite rare. It happens about 0.5% to 2% of the time. And so knowing that very few children have low blood glucose, really the main priority should be giving them a dose of a benzodiazepine.
Okay, this is a good spot to stop. After we identify a seizure, our first priority is not the glucose. It's the ABCs. Check the airway, and if there's an obstruction, do a jaw thrust or use an adjunct airway. Place the kiddo on oxygen and put them on the monitor. Hypoglycemia is a rare cause of seizures, and this is not the top priority. Manish and I are part of the EMS for Children's Innovation and Improvement Center and PCARN Prime and CHAMP nodes. We all want to get out the latest research and best practice into the hands of those taking care of kiddos, you. So keep listening. Part 3 is about what to do after the ABCs.